The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Handler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thank you all for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mark, what is new this week in recovery news?
So we got some good news. According to a new study in the Journal of Social and Science Medicine, people born between 1990 and 2000 are less likely to partake in risky behaviors such as drugs, booze, and sex. Some of this is being attributed to less face-to-face hangout time. Only 20% of 14 and 15-year-olds report ever having sex, compared to 37% in 1993. 80% of 10th graders reported attending a rager with friends at least once a month in the 90s. This shrunk to 57% currently. Cigarette decline has declined by 80%. Alcohol weekly use has dropped from 25% in 2003 to 8% in 2014.
Okay, well, it sounds good. My question would be the decrease in cigarette smoking, I think most of them have gone to vape.
Yes.
Is that true?
It's absolutely true. And, you know, this study actually also saw a drop in marijuana use as of 2019. And I got to tell you, that is out the window now with legalization. All the kids are getting a hold of their parents' pot or their vape pens and all this stuff. So that's very concerning as soon as we make headway.
Look, with this legalization process, we've talked about this a lot. Everybody thinks anything goes in anywhere, in any state. It's just not true.
Yeah, and the kids are watching this. You know, they're seeing this, and they think that it's like smoking of just a regular vape now. And I'm hearing all the high schools, like kids are walking around, they're just smoking vape pens.
Well, the young kids, younger than 16, here's what I think should happen. I think before they actually go to get their driver's license, their test, they have to be tested.
Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine back in the day? I mean, that's a great idea
now,
Gary.
Because, you know, that stuff stays in your system, what, 28 days?
Yeah. Oh, and longer if somebody's a heavy smoker.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is a shame. You know, as soon as we make some headway, it's going to go the other way.
All right, great. You know? What else do you have, Mark?
So this is really interesting. In the town of Poughkeepsie, New York, Marist College – on the campus of Marist College, it's being reported that a student was bitten by a coyote. And currently, they have not found this coyote, and it's loose. It's super scary, Gary.
Okay. First of all, let me see a picture of this coyote.
Yeah, I don't have a picture, and this is a true story. Everybody can look it up. It was actually on Fox News.
Well, I actually did look it up before the show, and that is actually a squirrel.
No, I think it's a coyote.
Okay, so let me ask you this. It's very interesting. Can you bring it in to tell us what this has to do
that's
with this show?
That is a great question, Gary. I mean, I think we could use the angle, you know, a kid coming home partying and maybe they were drunk at 3 a.m. and they walked across campus and got bitten.
And maybe it wasn't – he didn't get bitten by an animal. Because he was so intoxicated.
That's true. And, you know, to picture it, right now the Department of Environmental Protection, the Poughkeepsie Police Department, they're all looking for this coyote that's believed to be rabid. So.
Okay. Look, so I guess we should put an announcement. Anybody in that area should be aware of a rabid coyote.
Yes. And okay. and that was my alma mater, Marist College.
Yeah, so. I know. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, sure. Okay, that sounds good. All right, listen, when we come back, we are going to be speaking with Randy Lurch, an American former professional baseball pitcher who played in many cities, and what a story he has. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
The police called after midnight when they caught our son at a drinking party. It was a real wake-up call. My wife and I are really worried. We don't know if our son has a serious problem or if he's just hanging around with the wrong crowd. How do we know what to do? The police officer who brought our son home suggested we try Al-Anon family groups. He said it might help to hear how other parents are dealing with alcohol problems. I didn't want to go to an Al-Anon meeting. I didn't want anyone to think we had problems like that. And I didn't think our son's problem was that bad. When I decided to give Al-Anon a try, I found it was a safe place that keeps your problems private. It was very helpful. Are you troubled by someone else's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon or go to alanon.org.
Hi, this is Randy the Blade Lurch. I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
We are also heard on these great radio stations, WGAC in Augusta, Georgia, WHFS in Tampa, Florida, and the big talker, WWWE in Atlanta, Georgia. All righty. So, Randy Lurch is an American former professional baseball pitcher who played in the major leagues for the Philadelphia Phillies twice, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Montreal Expos, and the San Francisco Giants from 1975 to 1986. And this is an interesting fact, and we'll get Randy on. On September the 30th, 1978, Randy hit two home runs in a 10-8 win that clinched the National League Eastern Division Championship for the Philadelphia Phillies.
Imagine that. I mean, imagine the bulletin in the Inquirer the next day.
Absolutely. Randy, you there?
Hey, Randy.
I sure am. I like your intro, guys.
Hey, listen, we are so happy that you're on the show today. And, you know, we get a big response and you're, you know, you have so much to offer, Randy. So let's get into it right now. Where are you from?
I am from, Sacramento, California. Probably the big Philly nemesis is the home also of Dusty Baker.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But a good friend of mine who was a teammate with the Giants was Sacramento. And right now my home is in Cameron Park or Placerville, California, which is, about a half hour up the road towards Lake Tahoe.
That's
where
beautiful.
I'm sitting right now.
Beautiful, beautiful territory. Well, Randy, you have such a diverse life. You've done so many. You're such an athlete, and like the rest of us, you've had great times and bad times. So before we start, I just want to say something. And this is the first time this has happened during this show. I got correspondence from three different people who wanted me to say hello to you, and they swore that you knew them. The first one is Carl Pisani.
Yes, I do. I talk to Carl often.
Dave.
Hi, Carl.
and I'm sure he's watching. Dave Patterson says he played against you in high school.
He says he did, and because I probably fogged my memory with many, many abuses. Dave, I'm sorry, but I'm sure you did.
I'm sure he did. And one last guy, Jack Adams, wishes you the best.
Hi, Jack. How you doing, buddy? Yeah, Jack actually was an ex brother-in-law.
Right.
So I wish Jack well.
That's very nice. That's really – I wanted to get that out of the way. Okay. So you're in high school. You're playing baseball apparently. Did you know you were better or were you better than the rest of the kids playing?
I was pretty cocky, Gary. I thought I was pretty good, and you know, my achievements spoke for themselves. In my 3 years in high school, I lost one game, and wow. So I think I was like 30 wins, one loss, and
wow.
Then our high school was known for some great athletes. I mean, on the same high school team, we had, I think, four or five teammates that actually played in the major leagues at one time. And, you know, people, I think, even though it's been a long time ago, probably remember the great Jerry Manuel, who actually is going to be, he's going to be the bench coach for the World Classic. You know, it used to be in the Olympics, mm-hmm. but for America. So this great honor for Jerry. He actually was a manager for the New York Mets, and he was actually manager of the year for the Chicago White Sox. And you know, we had two first round draft choices in the nation off the same team the same year. So we had some great athletes, and it, you know, I was part of that.
Absolutely, and if my math is correct, you were drafted by the Philadelphia Phillies. Pretty much right out of high school?
Yes, I was right out of high school. I just turned 18 years old, and I tell the story in my book how I thought, wow, you know, after my high school year, I'm done. I got drafted, and next year I'm going to go play professional baseball.
And what did everybody say? Yeah, sure, Randy. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure, Randy. But after I did get drafted, I found out that's not the way it works. They actually take the college players and all the players that were drafted after their school years, and they ship you off to play a half of a season of pro ball. And they shipped me off to, after my last high school year, they shipped me off to Auburn, New York, where I went 9-2 that year and hit .310. So
wow.
Played a half a year and after my high school season, and it was like, welcome to the pros. A big guy.
You know, you were unique in the fact that usually pitchers, as much as I know, Randy, which is not a lot, usually pitchers are not great hitters, are they? And you were.
No, they're not. And the reason being is, you know, if I'm telling the correct information is, you know, a lot of the kids that come from high school, they're allowed to hit, but a lot of the players that come out of college and stuff like that, they're just only pitchers. And I was allowed to hit, and I took a lot of pride in it. I thought I was I actually enjoyed hitting more than pitching. I loved to be able to play every day, and so I practiced it hard. I thought I was a better hitter than a pitcher. Some people would dispute that, but I really enjoyed it, and I was good at it.
You're a left-hander, aren't you?
I am. Left-hander, hitter, and pitcher.
Wow.
Yeah, and do you think, Randy, that part of all these professionals coming out of the high school team, was it like really good coaching or something? Why do you think that was, that there were so many good players from your high school?
People say we have our high school most of the kids we had and still have, you know, they don't use it anymore for a military base, but it was Mesa Air Force Base, and we had a lot of the Air Force kids that went to high school, so we had kids from all over the country that came to our high school, and so we had a ton of great athletes, and you know, our coach, I have to shout out for our coach Anderson. He was, you know, the coach of our high school team. He just turned 90 years old, and our coach is the winningest high school baseball coach ever in the nation. And I was blessed enough to be able to sit with him at an award show just recently and share time with him. And man, he looks he just looks like he's just doing so well.
You know, of course there's a little luck in everything, but it seems like it was the perfect storm for you at your school as far as your teammates, your coaching, and your natural ability. You really took advantage of that and made a great career out of it.
We did, and I did. We were, I think, number three in the country for our high school team, and it was just a lot of fun going out there. And you know, my day that I pitched, I was really somebody who got really, really nervous, like a lot of the athletes do. And so the day I pitched, I hated it because it was like I was nervous the night before, nervous all day long.
Right.
But the days that I hit, I just – it was like, you know, go out, have some fun, run around, play the outfield, and go see if you can hit a home run or help win the game. So, you know.
I guess as a hitter, the heat – of the whole game isn't just on you, but as a pitcher, you're either blamed or you're rewarded.
Oh, that's exactly right. I couldn't believe it. I still like it was yesterday, Gary. When I was at 20 years old, I was called up from Double A at the end of the year to pitch in the major leagues. And you know, you go from the minor league stadiums are a whole lot prettier in those days than high school stadiums. Yeah. But man, I walked into Veterans Stadium, and you talk about and then Shea Stadium in New York, Wrigley Field in Chicago, and then you talk about intimidating. I mean, I remember the thoughts of, oh my goodness, what did I do to myself? You know, I really want to be doing this. I mean, it's very, very intimidating, and it's either you sink or swim. So thank God I made it for 11 years.
Oh, my God. I mean, the first time, were you like, what am I doing here? I mean, is this for real? I mean, there's, you know, tens of thousands of people, and I'm just Randy Lurch. I mean, you know what I mean? It must be an incredible feeling. What's it feel like? By the way, let me just tell our audience, if you've just joined us, we're speaking with former American professional baseball pitcher Randy Lurch, and I'm sure many of us across the country know who you are. What was it like when you hit the first home run and you're running around the bases? What does it feel like, and what does it sound like?
Let me think. The first home run. As I'm finishing the story before the first home run is when I first pitched in the major leagues, it was in Wrigley Field, and the wind was blowing out like crazy. And I ended up I came in for the great Steve Carlton,
yeah.
And he was up. I think the score was like 12-2 going into the ninth inning. I think Danny Ozark felt like, oh man, we're pretty safe. Bring in the rook, right?
Yeah.
And by the time they took me out, I had given up a grand slam.
Oh.
The score was like 12-5 or 6, something like that. And Danny had to get Gene Garber up, which they wanted to give him a day's rest with our closer along with Tug, and give him some rest, and he had to come in and close the game out.
What'd that feel like, Randy?
Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible.
And then
I did that. But then, you know, when I hit my, I think it was the first home run up of Woody Fryman in Philadelphia. I hit a home run and a double. We won the game, and that was my first experience of hitting a home run. And then listening to the Philly fans, you know, when the Philly fans are happy, it was like that. Yeah, it was. They cheered, and it was. They were doing the Randy thing, and uh-huh. You know, I got at first in Philadelphia, I got to find out what the cheering side of the Philly fans were, and you know, soon I was to find out the other side of it too. But it was a great feeling.
Oh, I can't even imagine. You know what? I was thinking about this last night, Mark. Yeah. You know, people like Randy Lurch were just people I used to hear about. And now we are so fortunate. We're actually friends with this guy.
I was probably 7 years old.
Yeah.
And I remember I would see your baseball card, Randy. And, you know, and I have I always wondered this about pitching. Like, do you get big time in your head? Like, you start, say you throw three balls in a row, you walk a person. Next thing you know, the next player, you're throwing ball after ball. And do you get in your head, like, when is this going to stop? When am I going to hit the freaking strike zone? Uh-huh. You know, when am I going to forever, people are just going to hit me? Like, what's that like for you as a pitcher? How do you keep that mental stability?
That is a great question. Because I went through a period like that my rookie year. I won the first five out of seven games I started my rookie year. And then I went into a situation where I was starting a game, and I was going ball one, ball two, ball three, and then I'd walk somebody. And then I ended up not pitching well, and I kept doing it. And the Boo Birds came out. And once that started hitting the papers that, you know, Lurch can't throw strikes, you know, the Philadelphia fans couldn't wait for me to throw the first ball of the game. And I threw the first ball and they started booing me, it was so intimidating that I went through a long period to be able to throw strikes, to the point they were booing me so bad that my wife couldn't come to the games, because I tell this story, which is true. My kids were sitting in the stands, and they thought when the fans started booing me that that was cheering daddy. So they'd go, boo daddy.
Hey, yeah, Randy, during this period of time, I mean, was your intake of whatever you were using, alcohol and everything else, did that increase as your skills for a period of time went down? And did the usage go when it went down? Was your usage determined by how well you were pitching? That's, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
Yes and no, Gary, but this will kind of, in a way, answer your question. But my mind was always on, you know, I always used to say, and it's true, if I did really well, I'd celebrate with the alcohol, and if I did really bad, I would drown my sorrows, right?
Yeah.
But if I did really bad, you know, I was either, you know, I was either Castle or, you know, to the bottom. And if I got taken out of the game early, the first thing I did was head to the beer cabinet, you know, and I started drinking, and if I lasted an inning or two, you know, I was drunk a couple innings later, and then I just kept going all night.
Did you guys have a beer cabinet in the bullpen? I mean, it was
No. But I would be taken out of the game. So I was in the clubhouse.
Randy, I thought the same thing that Mark did, that you guys had beer in the bullpen.
Oh, no, I don't want to spread that, because that wouldn't be true. But no, we had all the beer we wanted to drink when we weren't playing.
Yeah.
And as soon as I was taken out of the game, you know, the first place I went was to the beer to drown my sorrows.
Wow.
So I was constantly abusing alcohol.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to mention, again, if you're just joining us, we're having a great conversation with Randy Lurch, American professional baseball pitcher who played with a lot of teams and is well-known across the country for all the great things, all the great athletic things. And then there were some things that weren't so great, but we're going to get into that. I want to mention, if you're just listening to the show but you want to watch us, go to Facebook and our page, Clean and Sober Radio, and you can watch us do the show like these folks: Frank DeSantis, Debbie Reynolds, Laura Story, Kevin Gleason, Bill Stahl, Kevin O'Keefe, Go Eagles, Go Eagles, of course. Kathy Wolf Cullen is watching. Judge Christopher Maddox is watching. Judge Andrea Duffy is watching.
Right.
Judge Maddox says, have a great show, Fly Eagles. I wonder if everybody who's listening to this is saying the same thing. I don't think so.
What do you mean?
Well, like, people in
in the other states.
In the other states.
Yeah.
Right? Don Hurley is watching. Hey, Don, what's up, buddy? All right, Linda Carroll is watching. Susan Garber Pisano was watching. James Jacobs. Let's do this. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get a little deeper with Randy and learn all the backstories.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Diversity in the workplace is more than gender, ethnicity, and even age. It also means people in recovery. The Higher Calling Foundation works to end the stigma of substance use disorders in the workplace by helping those in recovery find jobs, get career counseling, and more. All things insurance doesn't cover, and all at no cost. And encouraging businesses to hire employees in recovery, because with the Great Resignation, there are jobs to be filled, and employees in recovery are an untapped demographic. It's mutually beneficial. And it's simply good business. Started by employment attorney in recovery Kevin Heyer, the Higher Calling Foundation believes everyone deserves a second chance and works to make that happen. And now, diversity in the workplace demands it. Visit HigherCalling.org. That's HYERCalling.org. And find out how we can help you.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. It drove me crazy. It got so bad, I couldn't do my homework. I couldn't concentrate. I absolutely refused to let any of my friends come to our house for any reason. I would have been humiliated if anyone found out how much my dad drank and how loud my mom screamed at him. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful. The only thing that happened is my mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. Her relationship with my dad really changed. I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Alateen. I wanted to see if I could have a better relationship with my dad. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon or go to alanon.org.
Hi, I'm Billy J. Kramer, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
We're just having so much fun interviewing Randy Lurch, who's, you know, besides his skills, he's just a great guy. And Randy, you can verify this. We have conversations pretty often off the air, and we talk about a lot of stuff, and it's nice to, you know, I guess I'm sort of like a groupie in a way. I'm still like in awe of people like you, even though I know you're just a people, you know?
But you know what, Gary? Yeah. I because you're so humble, I want people to know that I call you as a mentor. I've called you before out of frustration, yeah, because, you know, I wanted things in a hurry, because yeah, once I was diagnosed with cirrhosis, you know, my big thing was to be able to touch as many people as possible. And, you know, being someone that's achieved quite a bit on the baseball field, I thought I was going to do the same by being able to get the word out, sharing my book, sharing my story. And out of my frustrations, you know, I would get turned down. You know, and I say, well, I would like to come and share my story. Well, you know what? You have to prove your, you know, anyway, I would yeah, tell you that kind
yes,
of stuff
yes,
of my frustration. And I can tell you, my friend, you have always been the first person with some great advice for me. So
wow,
on the air, I say thank you.
That makes me feel so good. Hey, let's talk about this. You were inducted into the Reading Baseball Hall of Fame in 2000. And recently, my friend, you were inducted this year into the Sacramento Area Baseball Hall of Fame. That's something else. You know that? Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, that was in the most humble way. That was this one was for De La Salle. The other one I did was for Sacramento Sports Hall of Fame. which was all the, in Sacramento, it was all the sports athletes, like the last one, in Sacramento, which had a lot of them. There's been 40 inducted over the years. And, the one that I was just kind of a funny story, two Saturdays ago was inducted into, was called the De La Salle, Hall, Sports Hall of Fame. And, it's a Catholic youth organization that takes the, you know, a lot of in the Sacramento area takes some of the Christian schools and stuff like that, and you know, they honor the athletes and stuff like that. And it's so funny that when I first my first year in the major leagues, or my second year, the year I hit the two home runs, Tug McGraw felt like maybe I have enough notoriety to go on his Jerry Lewis bicycle event for Jerry Lewis and make money. So we rode bicycles, 10-speed bicycles. We had Steve Carlton, Roman Gabriel, Ben Davidson, John Montefiore, wow. Larry Christensen. We all rode 10-speed bikes from Seattle, Washington, all the way to San Diego. And wow. Halfway through it, my Rancho Cordova, where I grew up, asked if I would come and speak at their sports event. It was called the Knights of Columbus. It was the it was the Catholic youth organization at Rancho Cordova, and I had never ever been invited to speak in public in my life, let alone in front of like 300, 400, 500 people, right?
Yeah.
And so I asked Tug McGraw if he would go with me. Because, you know, I mean, he came from New York, the World Series there, you got to believe, and all that. And, you know, and then with the Phillies before the World Series in 78. But, you know, with all that experience, I said, would you go with me? Kind of hold my hand because I'm terrified. And so he said, God bless him. He said he would. And I think that's where we formed such a great bond. And so we get there, and I said, I called him Toogie. Toogie. Man, what do I do? How do I get rid of these nerves? How do I speak in front of all the people I grew up with? And you know, goofy Tug.
And what did he say, said, Randy?
Just pretend. You can't believe this. Just pretend that all of them are sitting on the toilet.
There you go.
Just pretend they're all sitting on the toilet. And then you'll get a big laugh and you'll relax up there and everything.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah, so anyway.
And for people that don't realize, Tug McGraw was a famous Philadelphia Philly that won the World Series back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Did it work, Randy?
Yes, it did. Because actually, I was supposed to do that in my mind.
Yeah.
Right? But I told the audience what Tug said. And I got the biggest laugh. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to tell him, right? He goes, I got up and he goes, you idiot. I wasn't supposed to tell him that.
Oh, that's
so anyway,
funny.
But what it was the Knights of Columbus was the Catholic youth organization that that invited me. And that was my first speaking engagement. And then, you know, at 68 years old, this De La Salle event was in the Sacramento Ranch Cordova area was my last. So I've pretty much come full circle, and I feel very blessed for that.
Wow, you should. Randy, Richard Carrera says, you are a great guy. Honored to call you his friend.
Well, the honor goes both ways, Richard. Nice. Thank you for calling in, buddy. He is a great friend. We talk often. Our families are very close.
Oh, that's great.
He's practicing his announcing. I went to a high school game, and he does a great job at it. They're a great family.
That's super. Randy, tell our audience about the issues you had with the Phillies regarding the physician that was prescribing amphetamines to all the players. And you got involved in that, and if the team didn't like it, you got involved as far as – I'm not sure if you were using. You probably were, but you sort of, you know, mentioned it, and the owners got very upset. What happened so long ago? It's 43 years ago. Can you believe it? What's the story? What's the backstory with that?
Well, I've been waiting all these years to be able to. I kept that that story confidential because I'm not one that would put anybody's name out there.
Yeah.
But what I did is there was, now it's a known thing that Greenies it was a Greenie thing. It was an amphetamine that a lot of the players took, and we ended up in Reading. Some of the players who came to Reading knew there was a team doctor there, and some of the players asked, once they got to the major leagues, asked the physician. They said, I need some energy. Could you write a prescription for some Greenies?
Yeah.
And he thought he was doing the players a big favor. But the problem was is the guys were using, they were filling a lot of prescriptions. And the way that they were getting the prescription was that the doctor had a friend, a big Philly fan, and they would fill them, and he would bring the prescriptions all the way down, not in, but down to the clubhouse. And one day, after one of my teammates asked to fill a prescription and without my permission, put my name on it. They saw the Drug Enforcement Agency is like a class 2 or 3 drug or something like that.
Yeah.
They saw all these famous names on these drugs. And thought that this doctor was actually selling the drugs on the street to make extra money. And so they filed a complaint, and because my name was on that prescription, they went ahead and investigated it. They took it, all these people's, the other people's names that were on it, the players' names, they went ahead and did a pre-trial situation. They were going to take the doctor's practice away and put him in jail. And some of the players got up there and denied knowing the doctor. But it was when my turn in court to speak, I told him that he was actually sitting in the first row right in front of me when I was sitting on a stand.
Oof.
And I saw how sad he was and what a great guy he was. He was just trying to help, right? He was a big fan. And so he didn't think he's doing anything wrong. Excuse me. So anyway, when I got up there, I told the truth. And I took the blame for all of it. And they ended up throwing the case out. But my name was Mud, and I was known as a, they called me, I was known as the Greenie Fiend and
wow.
It was a real tough deal, but the greatest thing I ever could have gotten was a letter from the doctor's family for saving their daddy.
It
did a number on me.
And it was all over. Was it all over the newspapers and everything like that? A big scandal at that time?
It was a huge scandal. It hit all the main newspapers. We were known as the Philadelphia Phillies. And I got traded to the Brewers after that.
Yeah.
Not a lot of teams want to take a chance on you. And it was so difficult because, when you go into different stadiums, it was the American League at the time, when the fans are along the rails, when you would normally sign autographs, the kids are screaming at you, what a drug addict you are.
Oh, my.
And stuff like that. Ugh. So. It was really difficult for myself, my family, and the whole bit. But I went out that year and won we went to the playoffs. The Brewers did, and I started, and at the game we won in the first playoff game in the history of the Brewers against the Yankees with
good.
Reggie Jackson and Winfield and all those guys.
Wow.
So I beat the Yankees in Yankee Stadium.
Good for you. Our number is 1-888-728-9941. That's 1-888-728-9941. Give us a call, and this is a great opportunity to be speaking with a professional pitcher who is an icon. This is your opportunity.
Randy Lurch.
Randy Lurch. And you
know, Blaze Lurch.
Randy Lurch has a book out, and I'm going to show it. It's called God in the Bullpen. And you have to get this book. It's on Amazon. And it's actually written with Randy by a guy named Harold Lurch, who is no relations. But it's interesting. The book is fabulous. It's informative. It really gets into Randy's head. Check it out on Amazon. You really should read this book if you're a baseball fan. Yeah.
Go get it today.
Get it today.
Right? And help support the whole cause. Randy does some really great work. And Randy, you're actually – you sometimes speak to some ball players and stuff about staying away from this kind of stuff, right?
Yes, and it's I start out with the stories about baseball, some great inside never-told stories, funny ones that happened in my career, and some accomplishments too. Talk about the 23-22 game in Chicago, along with some other ones, but also then I get into very, very vivid the addiction of what I went through, the rehabs. When I was attacked by a Great Pyrenees dog and almost died, drove my car off a cliff. There's a lot of things. And what I've done is, Gary and Mark, I've, instead of thinking that I was going to sell a bunch of these books, as soon as people, I think, hear the God in the bullpen and addiction, you have to be able to get out there and talk about it. And what I've done is through Facebook and everything else, if there's someone, I see someone struggling, I write to them and even sometimes speak to them, but I always get their address if I feel like my book can help. And out of my own pocket, I send them the book and sign it and then follow up with them. So my story of hope is constant.
And, I'm just... You said something there. I don't think we've heard this story. You said you were attacked by somebody?
An animal.
Yeah,
an animal?
I was in the height of my alcoholism when I was drinking a quart of vodka a day.
Yeah.
I went over to a lady's house, drunk. It was only probably, it didn't matter. I was still driving. It was only probably a mile away from my house. She was dog sitting, or not? She was dog sitting or watching a house for people, and there was this great big old white dog in the backyard, and I didn't know what it was. It was huge, and in my drunken stupor, I went out there to walk up to it, and she said, "Don't go out there. It's chained up." She said, "That dog's mean." I said, "Oh, no way. Dogs love me."
Oh no.
Well. I petted the dog. It was wagging its tail like it was my best friend. But then I turned around to walk away, and the dog attacked me. And it was the Great Pyrenees, which their bred is actually as a bear dog. And people can look that up. But it grabbed me by my elbow, and it dragged me to the ground. And before I knew it, I was in the fight of my life. I actually rolled it. It was on top of me, and I had it. Thank God I was still strong, and I had it by each cheek, by its jowls, and it would throw its face, and it took the top of my left the bone off my left arm, and took that in two. I almost bled to death, and thank God the hospital was close. And after many hours on the operating table, the doctors put me back together. I spent quite a few days in the hospital and almost died that day because of my alcoholism.
Were you still pitching at that point or no?
No, my alcoholism, I was drinking way too much when I was playing.
Yeah.
But once I quit playing and didn't know what to do with myself, that's when my career was over. I lost my home. My wife walked away from me. And I drowned all that with alcohol. I drank myself to death.
That's what we do, don't we? I mean, listen, it must be especially difficult for somebody like you who has had fame people screaming, "We love you," and then to hit bottom is a real shocker. And it's no wonder why I'm saying me and Mark, I'm sure, when things went really bad, that's when we increased our intake to drown ourselves in something that made us feel better, you know.
That's exactly right. And I was drinking, worked up to a quart a day, and I was drinking so much that I had the shakes so bad, the only way I could to get rid of them and get any alcohol to myself was to with a straw until the shaking went away. But you know, I went to rehab. My blood alcohol was like 3.6.
Whoa.
So I went to rehab and went to had friends come and put me in the hospital twice for the detox, but you know, I still, my pride got to me, guys, and I never, ever, I never quit. I did back off, but I never, ever quit until God said, "Man, what do I got to do to get you to stop?" And once the cirrhosis, I knew if I drank anymore, I'd die. And I only I've got a ticking clock right now, of how much God has given me because this cirrhosis is the death sentence.
When did you get sober, Randy?
Six years ago, September 3rd.
September 3rd. Wow. You know,
awesome. That's freaking great, Randy.
Yeah. Did you hear the applause, Randy? We're all applauding.
I did. I loved it.
We're all applauding you, man.
It's so amazing.
September 3rd. So when September comes this year, it will be 7 years?
It will be 7 years.
That's great.
And, when I got the phone call that you have cirrhosis, and, of course, I being the alcoholic I was, I knew exactly what cirrhosis was. But, you know, one thing that I didn't realize, I guess with my pride, I didn't know that cirrhosis was a death sentence. I didn't know it would kill you. I thought, like the ego that I have as an athlete, I thought, well, if I just quit, you know, I'll just get better and things will come around. But, you know, this time was the big one. And when I saw the look at my little Maria, my wife's face, and tears running down her face, and she says, "Oh, God, please don't leave me." And at that point, after 40 years of drinking, I quit on the spot. That was my bottom.
That was your bottom. Look, hopefully you're going to be around for a long, long time. And because, you know what? You have such good karma around you, Randy. You know, we have total – we're you're going to be here a long time. But what we have to do right now is take another break. When we come back, we're going to learn about what Randy's doing these days with all the giving back that he does to help others to get into sobriety. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF now. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer. Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Hi, I'm Tony Luke Jr., and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, if you're in need of help, call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Line at 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP, and there is absolutely help on the other end of that phone. That's for sure. Randy, we were just talking about the dog story that you that dog must have weighed more than you did.
160 pounds. Great Pyrenees. They said they bred them and for farmers that bears come down and kill their cattle, they bred those dogs. And, I had no idea, but it was a white dog. And people, when I was in the hospital, they said that they went to look at the dog, and they said it was a danger. You know, they got to put it down. It's not the first time it was mean, I guess. They said it was that white dog wasn't white anymore. It was red.
Oh, my God.
And Gary and Mark, one thing I was thinking, what am I going to talk about when you guys ask me questions? Mm-hmm. And I want folks to know out there that this, when I said the cirrhosis, I never knew that cirrhosis would kill you. Excuse me. And I can tell you how horrible, and Gary and Mark, the same thing. But I can tell you that out of all the accomplishments that I made, from many, many years of playing pro sports and then getting some nice awards and stuff. And I mean this with all my heart. My greatest accomplishment in my life, the baseball and all that fulfilled my childhood dream. It wasn't making it to the major league, but it was to quit drinking. To accomplish that, to the terrible, terrible addiction it is, because unless we follow, the standards that's set out by AA and all the people that have been there before us, like myself, Gary and Mark, unless we realize that this stuff is nothing to play with, and then on top of it, I can tell you when I quit over 6 years ago, how much my life's changed. And I feel just so blessed to be able to, I never would have dreamed to be able on a show to be able to talk about addiction with two great people like Gary and Mark.
Well,
so
thank you.
I want people to know that.
Well, thank you, because Mark and I never expected to be on a show like this either and talking to somebody like you, Randy Lurch.
Yes, we did not. The guy that used to see your baseball card.
Yes.
It's quite an honor.
Hey, Randy, before we get into a little more stuff, did you have a Triumph TR6?
I did. That was my very first car, the first car I ever purchased myself out of my signing bonus. I signed for $28,000 with all my stuff. And the car, I paid $5,000 cash for that pretty red Triumph TR6.
What year was it?
Oh, that was 1974.
I think. Yeah, I had a 76 red one. I love that car.
You're kidding me.
No. No.
They're the coolest cars.
What's this?
I actually, when I drove to spring training for the minor league spring training, I went to Sears and bought one of the little itty trailers and had it set up to bring all the stuff. I just got married and to put my wedding gifts in it. So I pulled a little trailer from California to Florida in Clearwater with it.
Well, those TR6s were great cars. Randy, do you mentor any other athletes? Because you definitely have a voice and you have, you're certainly credible. And I know you're helping people. I was wondering if some of the people that you do help are actually athletes.
I mentor anybody. They actually haven't been as many athletes. It's been more people from our church, AA. Mm-hmm. I'm actually in talks right now, getting vetted to go and speak to Folsom Prison inmates. So I'm going to go to Folsom Prison, and I'm gonna speak there. I'm going to have my books in their library where the inmates can read the story.
You and Johnny Cash.
I'm Johnny. It is Johnny Cash, right?
That's
right. They have Johnny Cash way there and all that, but they have an old New Folsom. I'm looking forward to that. And like I said, I spent a lot of time sharing the story because once you're enthralled with this addiction thing, you know, the pride jumps in and you think you could do it yourself. And that's just not the way it works.
Wow. Wow. Listen, I would love to be in Folsom Prison, you know, as a visitor, of course, watching you do your thing. That is going to be so powerful, Randy.
Right. Jerry Garcia went there, too.
Yeah. Jerry Garcia?
Did. Yeah, he played.
Randy. Yeah, Randy, and going in the same vein of talk, I was just appointed to the board of directors of a maximum security prison outside of Philadelphia.
You know, I think I read something about that. Holy cow.
Yeah, so.
Well, you know what? Maybe someday I can come over there and speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Folsom, oh man, that is going to be just. And guess what? You are so deserving of doing things like that. And I guess other people, they understand it because you're being vetted now to do it. Is that a difficult task to get this done?
I've got all the paperwork, so they told me no problem. It should be about a month. And in the meantime, Maria, my special Maria and I, we volunteer at what we call Common Ground. Every Saturday, our church feeds the homeless. Mm-hmm. And we do that, and there's so much addiction. They every Saturday morning, I mean, for however long, from 9 in the morning until 12, we volunteer a lot of different ways. But I bring my books. I don't set them out or anything like that, but I bring a few books in my car. And then if I see someone struggling or if I can help them, I'll go get my book and I'll share with them and sign the book for them and tell them, you know, where they can get some help. So we're trying. I'm learning too. You know,
sure.
If anybody knows how I can, I just God has given me this great time and privilege, and I just want to do the best I can with it.
Well, Randy, we certainly consider you a dear friend personally and of the show. And whatever we can, Mark and I can ever do to help you out, we are there for you. So we're at the hour. Thank you so much for giving us your time again. And you're just a great guy, and we really appreciate you.
Yeah, we were talking before the show. We were so excited that you were on because we know you've been on many times and just have such a great spiritual message, you know.
So God bless you, Randy.
Thank you so much, guys. When I get off, I always have a great feeling. So you just did it again.
Awesome.
We'll hopefully talk soon.
Absolutely. Okay. Love you, brother.
Love you guys. Bye-bye. Yeah.
See you, Randy.
What a great guy, man, right?
Amazing.
Real quick before we go, Jane Shapiro is watching. Andrea Diaz
My beautiful wife is
watching. And people just love this show. And it's a feel-good show. And it shows you that addiction has no boundaries. But we also can get better. So remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com. Brad, thanks a million. Wesley, thanks a million. And we'll see you guys next week.
Every 2 minutes, a woman in the U.S. is diagnosed with breast cancer. And in that split-second moment in time, her life changes forever. The toll of breast cancer is great. The need to support those who are battling the disease today is even greater. And that's why when others look away, Susan G. Komen leans in. We're fighting alongside patients because we know one moment can change a lifetime. Fighting Breast Cancer takes funding for research to discover the next new treatment, providing access to quality and affordable health care, and people willing to take action by raising funds and raising their voice to advocate for others. United by hope, we can end breast cancer. Join our fight. Save lives.